And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is March 21st, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today, I have a very special guest on my show. It is somebody that can help us all, for everybody who is inspired to write something in their life or wants to tell their own story. There is a method, there is a technique, and there is people who know how. And today, I'm so happy to welcome a very, very dear person, Leslie Kaplan. Leslie, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored to be here.
Oh, thank you. We are happy to have you. You know, for somebody who wants to write so much, I thought that you'll be the ultimate, you know, gift to the audience to tell them your side of inversion to how to write book and what a writer can really achieve by telling their story. Tell me some about your deal.
So I've been writing since I was 10 years old, and it started as a way to heal a lot of the trauma that I came from. So I got to disappear into my own self and learn about myself through the process of writing, which I find to be very alchemical. Writing can reveal yourself to yourself, and you gain an intimacy and strength with your own voice coming out onto a page. You discover the deepest parts of you that are revealed. And as I grew older and found my voice, I began to write for the public and began to publish. And what I have found, like most recently, I wrote an essay that was extremely personal. And actually, I cringed putting it out there when I hit the send button. I was shaking, but I hit the send button anyway, and it was a very deep personal story about healing the mother wound, which is really tapping into a strong universal vein of wound that people have. And I received letters from around the world from that piece, people thanking me for writing it, for speaking what they have been keeping hushed in their own self for so long. And I spoke some things out loud, and that gave them permission to write me and tell me their stories that they've been keeping clenched inside themselves for so long, people having cathartic healings through reading my essay. And I began to learn that ripple impact of sharing those really hard stories and saying them out loud, and how the ripple effect, it's like the wound touches the wound touches the wound, but the healing touches the healing touches the healing.
All right. Let me start with opening it up. Like you said, you're brainstorming in the writing way, because I know that every writer needs to start writing and he doesn't stop until something starts to appear. Is that true? Is that the way it goes for
That's
you?
That's absolutely true. We need to learn to kind of spill ourselves out and let that, you know, person that wants to edit ourselves and write perfectly just kick that person to the curb and let yourself spill out in a stream. And what happens, and that's why I say writing is so alchemical, is these beautiful gems come out of you. And when you get out of the way and you discover yourself and you discover your voice, and actually most of the time some brilliant writing comes out that way more so than if you sat down and tried to do it.
All right. Now, once you start writing and you get to start, you know, evolving, now, do you have always touch the sensitive side of you, or you can tell, you know, good, great stories? Because, you know, some people don't really want to reveal themselves. Is that intentional, or is something, whatever you have to say will come out no matter what? Is that something that can, you know, Are you controlling that better? No, it's just the stream. Like every writing say, it comes within, and whatever you have to say, it will tell the story. Is that the way you feel it's in your experience?
That's how I feel in my experience, that it comes out more in a stream. And you can always craft that stream so that it can, if you want to share it, so that it can be a cohesive, rounded, full essay. But when you let yourself write in a stream, you're letting your soul reveal itself to you, the deepest parts of you. If you sit down and try, you know, your editor's going to come in and say, oh, this isn't good, or, you know, I shouldn't write this, or this is too personal, or I'm revealing too much. But when you let all that get out of the way, the most beautiful, personal, intimate parts of ourselves can come out.
Now, why it's important for you to write? Because today I was thinking to myself that people, you know, they come and they go and nothing left. And really, books is something that people have to leave behind, like journals, but a real book about their story of their life. If not really, you know, their life doesn't really matter to the world. If you have some important experience that you're sharing, you can leave something behind for generations to keep. And that's something that for me, as somebody who tried to make a difference in the world, is important. Is that something that comes across in your experience too? Or is it because, you know, living as a Jewish person, for me, it's always is a mission. You know, you have to be worthy of your soul. And it's something that you're born with and you need to do it. So the question is, revealing one story, is it making a difference in the end of the game?
Makes a huge difference. I really do. It's like when I told you in the beginning about the piece that I wrote about the mother wound, the fact that I got letters from around the world, people telling me their cathartic healings that came from my piece that I wrote in 800 words, that impact of being, when you speak your story and you say the personal things and you reveal yourself and let yourself be vulnerable and someone else reads that and it slides right into their heart, they're changed. The letters that I received were unbelievable. They were spilling out to me their stories that they never told anybody. And that's the impact, that when you read something that someone wrote from their heart, and that's something maybe that you've never done, and you read it and you go, wow, I'm not the only one that feels this way. Wow, she said the very thing that I've been scared to say my whole life. That is like a salve for your soul, something that's been hidden and buried for so long. It gives that person a place of power within themselves. Like, wow, if she can say that out loud to the world, I can say that. I feel seen by her. I feel heard by this piece of writing. That's a very powerful ripple impact that you can have when you share your story.
Right, because it's really important. But because there are so many books around and people are really trying to seek some knowledge, the important thing you say is to write directly and be honest and just let your soul be the mate for this journey and create an understanding, and the audience will share the experience and will be empowered by that. Is that true?
That's exactly right. You know, human beings right now, we need depth, we need heart, we need vulnerability, we need courage. Courage breeds courage. I mean, we have so much fear that breeds fear in the world, and we need
right.
more vulnerability, more courage, because it ripples. It's like a domino effect, And, you know, you look at Donald Trump, he's breeding fear into the world, and then everybody gets all fearful. And, you know, if you can breed courage and compassion and this universal theme of being hurt, being wounded, coming from backgrounds that you don't even want to speak of, the more people say it out loud, the more courage is being fed and bred in the world. And people don't feel so isolated and alone when they just read somebody's piece that was shared in the world, and that person exposed their wound or exposed their isolation or their vulnerabilities. That reaches deep in the soul of another person and heals a part of them. Wow, I don't feel so alone. And that's huge. That's probably the biggest cavernous hole we have as humans, is that we feel alone. And when you share your writing and you touch somebody and you've kind of bared your soul, someone else will go, wow, she or he went through that too. I'm not alone anymore.
That's true, because empowering people by sharing the story makes a difference. And courage is something that we girls, we do need on a daily basis, because the challenges that a girl or women have are much bigger, and it's a staggering how important, you know, empowerment for women and the situation that they live in everywhere, all around the world today. So it makes completely sense to me. Now tell me, what's the name of your book?
I don't have a book. What I have is a bunch of essays that I am collecting to become a book. But I have a bunch of essays that have been internationally published. I also am a writing coach and an editor.
Yeah, of course, it's the work. It depends. You know, essays are important as, you know, like short stories, because they reveal stuff in a shorter way. And we will be looking for your book. You know, it's important for us to encourage us all to write, because once we can hear your voice, I feel like I want to start trusting in the world that once I reveal my story, it will be okay.
Exactly.
And like anybody else. So I really, first of all, I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing this. Second, I want to definitely wait for your upcoming book. I can wait for that. And I want to ask you to tell us, if the audience or people want to learn from you or get in touch with you, how they can do that.
You can contact me through my website. It's okay. Kind of a long name, but it's called CourageousHeartInMotion.com.
Wow. Nice. Courageous Heart in Motion. Fantastic.
Yes.
What a...
I'm kind of full force. I have a fierce passion for courage, and I help a lot of writers reach deep inside themselves and find their courage and their voice. And that's what I do for a living. I write, and I help others find their courage and their voice, and I advocate for them. I'm their biggest, most fervent cheerleader.
I'm so delighted. And now you write songs too?
I write poetry that's been published, and essays. And a lot of times I'll write an essay, and then at the bottom of the essay I put a poem. And that's been really powerful. The one essay that I spoke of in the beginning, you can Google it. It's called Healing the Mother Wound. That piece, it was published a month ago. It got thousands of shares, and I got phone calls and emails that still come in to this day thanking me for writing that piece. It's amazing what you can do. I mean, it takes crafting and practice. But what you can express in 800 words, you can put a lifetime in there. And the more distilled and refined we are, you realize that you don't have to go on and on for pages and pages and pages and chapters, that you can distill and refine the essence of yourself and lay it out in 800 words actually has the most impact I've ever seen.
It's amazing. Listen, I love your page. Your page of courageous art is fantastic. Leslie Kaplan, a professional editor and a writing coach, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we can't wait to read more of your stuff. I'm running through your pages, and you have songs and poems which I already starting to look into. Thank you so much for this. It's a great tip. It's a great motion, and I wish you all the best. And I want to send you all my blessings from Israel to you to have a wonderful, wonderful spring season in your heart and in your life, and a lot of courage to share with others. God bless
you.
Thank you.
God bless you, too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. It was wonderful. Thank you. God bless you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. Bye-bye, darling. All right, let's get some music and we'll be back after that.
Shut it out. What you heard about? What you heard about me? They say I'm rough. Loud, but they don't know nothing, not a thing about me. So tear up that list of things you wrote down.
All right, and we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. It's Monday. You know, guys, today so many things important are happening everywhere. First of all, we have President Barack Obama in Cuba, and hello, Cuba. God bless you. We're going to talk about it a little later to see what we're going to do. But right now, on the ground in Washington, D.C., the USA, we have thousands, but thousands of people gathering to listen and to understand about the challenges of the Middle East and the future of leadership, of American leadership in the Middle East. And it's a gathering with AIPAC, AIPAC being one of the strongest lobbyist group on the Hill. And since I know something about it, I can tell you how important this organization is. But before we do that, I want you to listen to some of the voices from the ages of AIPAC. Let's listen to this.
I said, it seems to me that we should really be going to Washington, and that instead of sitting here in New York and talking about these things, why don't we make a determined effort, all of us go to Washington? And that was in 1960. 45 people came to our first policy conference.
We come together today in our nation's capital.
Now, as you know, I'm leaving the UN, and I've been told by too many people that I respect that after 3 weeks in Israeli politics, I'll miss the UN.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Governor Bill Clinton.
The Vice President of the United States, Dan Quayle.
To the distinguished Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Colin Powell.
Today we are over 1,000 strong.
In Hebrew we say, Eipak, Kol HaKavod. I am deeply honored to be the first sitting president ever to address this conference.
Your organization has but one burning desire, one exclusive goal, to help Israel.
Your activities are essential, and I am sure the same spirit and partnership will lead us in the future.
As I look around this room at the more than 3,700 delegates, I am filled with great pride.
It's my first APEC conference as the Prime Minister of Israel.
And you have, I think, in APEC, the best grassroots organization in America, bar none.
We need you to keep up the advocacy that is keeping Israel strong and America safe.
APEC is extraordinarily vital to all of American foreign policy.
We are more than 5,000 strong.
I want to salute you for coming here every year to advocate for one of the most important cornerstones of American national security, and that is a strong and stable state of Israel.
U.S. support for Israel transcends party lines in Congress, again, thanks to APEC.
I'm told there are over 850 students here from 50 states.
I have come to understand that we share something terribly important. We share a history of fighting for justice. We share a powerful dream of peace.
APEC's continued support is more important now than ever before.
We are 7,500 activists strong.
What an indescribable feeling to be surrounded by so many true friends in the capital of the world's greatest democracy.
As always, APEC has brought together a large and public-minded group representing different parts of America.
As a man of faith, my spiritual roots have always been in Israel.
This pro-Israel movement that I serve in goes way beyond the Jewish community.
Israel is mi causa.
This is my 34th year hanging out with APEC.
You carry with you an extraordinary legacy of more than six decades of friendship between the United States and Israel.
I thank you for your friendship. I thank you for your courage. And I thank you for standing up for the one and only Jewish state. Thank you all.
We stand before you more than 13,000 strong.
The bonds of trust between Israel and America have never been stronger.
America needs a strong Israel, and Israel needs a strong America.
Good to see so many friends, all 14,000 of you.
Democrats and Republicans, all of us together.
We are unified in our commitment to preserve the state of Israel.
More than 16,000 delegates.
Let us all resolve to come together.
To the more than 18,000 delegates assembled here today at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the APEC Policy Conference.
All right. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. That was some background about APEC. You know, nobody can understand what is it to stand together with so many people cheering for one reason, for, you know, for the survival of the Jewish state. And many people tend to undermine it, and for some reason, many people think that Israel is something that is not even to protect these days, because there are so many wounded, and the story about the Palestinian goes around, and everybody is trying to tell stories what the Israeli is doing to the Palestinian, and there are movements, and there are people and organizations that are investing in it. And I must tell you something, and you have to understand that for me it's come from experience and from the truth that as I see it, of course, but it's the experience. We work so hard to try to clear what the bad mouthing of other people on and groups and Palestinian group, a many Palestinian group, because there is a misconception. One very easy to create and easy to fix if the world wants to understand. You just have to start telling the story of the truth about the Palestinian, you know, territory. The Palestinian territory is the territory. There is no Palestinian state, or there is no occupation of Palestinian state, because if there was a state, give me some records. There is no. Arafat was the first, Arafat, 1968. The first leader of the Palestinian state. Give me another leader of the Palestinian to tell me that we were occupying something when we came to, you know. And I love when they said, we need you to go back to pre-67 border. Pre-67 borders, Arafat started his movement in 1968. What are you talking about? And I'm not just saying, you know, that, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm talking. I'll be challenging anybody, you know, anybody who wants to come and talk with facts and show me why the Palestinian people have a claim over Jerusalem. I'm not talking about, you know, definitely not trying to get into a fight, but on the roots of the issue. Okay, let's talk about Turkey. You got the mosque there. The mosque was built by the Muslims, all right? So there is no entity of a Palestinian, and the Jordanian has actually custody over it. But the truth of the matter is, it's a Jewish site because we have archaeological artifacts that shows that it's ancient Jewish city. So I don't know, whatever you want to talk to me, you can call here. I'll be live till 8 p.m. Jerusalem time. All right, let's get some music and we'll be back after that.
She takes my breath away. She's got me calling every day. I can't seem to get enough. Could this be love? Stay up till late at night. Watch the stars burst into light. Watch movies all the time and we can't get enough.
I jump out of a plane. Write your name in the sky. You're shaking my life up. Could this be love?
All right, and we are back. Now, I start talking about the fact that, you know, more and more you think about it, it comes true once you start working with it. And APAC is a motion of understanding, of knowledge, and it's true and it's powerful because it's based on truth and understanding. You see, one of the techniques that people say, oh, they are buying them, or they are telling them, or they are spying on them. No, no. The truth of the matter is APEC is a hardworking organization. It's a daily routine of observing and understanding the issue and learning and getting the most out of it by sitting together and teaching each other and learning. They give you the method of understanding of whatever. And please don't try to make people believe that they influence you by thinking for you. No, they don't. They give you the fact you are challenged to use only factual understanding. And once you do that, you start to actually being outraged, because it's really, really easy to find the truth when you start listening. And you have to go through a United Nations archive, you're going through the Congress archive, you're going to go to the European, understanding the to National Court of Justice. We're not talking, you know, it's Israeli predictable archives and And the only archive I will quote from the Jewish state is the Bible. And if you guys want to say that we are, you know, changing it, well, it's been repeated again for thousands of years. It's the oldest book and the greatest book of all time. It's the most read book, and it states, by all means, that the Jewish state it's been and it will be forever. Now, it's, of course, we had some dispersion time, but does it mean that I'm stopping to be, you know, the person of the land? I remember one episode that I've been into the airport, and they said, oh, the passport, your American passport is expired. And I said, okay, so, well, we don't know if you can board a flight. I said, it doesn't make me stop being an American. If I go, it would expire passport, I'll make a new one. But it doesn't stop me from there. Do you understand? The fact that we left because we've been, you know, boosted out of it. Let's say that the diaspora didn't create it. It was created by, and you know, you see all those refugees everywhere? Those are refugees from Syria. If you think that in few generations they would come back to Syria, would you stop calling them Syrian? It's always, those children will be Syrian. Now, they can say the Palestinian got expulsed, or they ran out, or actually they ran out. The Palestinian of, you know, the people of the land, but that was the territory. Now, if you talk about the Palestinian territories, those territories include Jordan. Now, is Jordan is occupied territory? Duh. See, they going after the Jews again. And that's not funny. And it's not funny because they're using all sort of anti-Semitic words, understanding. And we have one champion that I discover and I love, and I want you to listen to him, Ben Shapiro from the University of UCLA, California. Listen to him.
University. I'm also a local talk show host on 870 in the morning, and I got out of bed and left my 1-month-old baby there when I saw what was going on here tonight. I've never been more ashamed to be a Bruin. I've never been more ashamed to be an alumnus of this university than to see this divestment petition being considered at this level. To pretend that this is about occupation, to pretend this is about peace, to pretend this is about anything but vile and despicable Jew hatred is a lie. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing Saudi Arabia. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing Iran. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing Palestine. There's only one reason we are discussing Israel and not discussing the vast bevy of human rights violations that happen every day in the Middle East, exponentially worse than what happens in Israel. Exponentially worse than what happens every day in Israel. Any gay or lesbian in this room who is targeting Israel for divestment seems to have forgotten how high they hang gays and brains in Iran. Every person of liberal bent who suggests that Israel is the problem in the Middle East seems to have forgotten that there is only one country in the Middle East that actually has any sort of religious diversity in it. The countries that are apartheid countries are those that are Judenrein, like, for example, Palestine. So for us to sit here and pretend that Israel is somehow on a lower moral plane is a direct manifestation of anti-Semitism. To hold Jews to a different than any other country, any other group on the face of the earth, represents nothing but an age-old and historic hatred for the Jewish people. And all the folks here who are pretending that BDS is about anything other than that, I would like to see a poll of those folks and see how many of them actually believe in the existence of a Jewish state, quad-Jewish state. Not as a state like any other, but as a Jewish state. They don't. They don't acknowledge that existence. They don't believe in that existence. They don't believe in peace. All this is about, pure and simple, is a desire to target the Jewish people.
All right, and that was Ben Shapiro. I'm sorry you couldn't hear him well, but his rhetoric is really clear. It's like, why you're picking on Israel is because it's anti-Semitism. All this movement to BDS or whatever for Palestinian, give me a break, okay? If they wanted to get organized to have a state, they have Gaza, they turn it to organized terrorist place. And if you want to see the result of those people with the tunnel they created and all the immense amount of money that was poured there, they turn it into a terrorist camp. So that's what they want. They want another terrorist camp and they want to get rid of Israel. And you know what? I don't think it's for their own purpose. It's just for the purpose of others. And these days when we have Iran in play, you know exactly who they are playing for. So I want to give the stage to a part of, you know, I cannot put it all, but to important situation, you know, that we all have to respect and understand the legacy of starting a new day in Cuba when President Obama went there and made an effort to start a clear. It's not easy. It's not easy because they are, you know, age, you know, light years away, but they can come and make a, you know, immense and immense difference in people's lives if they start sharing and joining forces. Let's listen to this.
This is the Washington Week Webcast Extra.
Hello, I'm Gwen Ifill. Welcome to the Washington Week Webcast Extra. I'm joined around the table by Pete Williams of NBC News, Karen Tumulty of The Washington Post, and Peter Baker of The New York Times. After months of relaxed access to Cuba, the president heads there next week to make policy and to make a point. What does this move toward normalization, even while the Castro brothers are still alive, mean, Pete?
Yeah.
There are too many Pete's at this table.
I'm good with Pete. Pete's okay with me. President Obama really wanted to go to Cuba. This is one of the things he's wanted to do since he's been in office, and it's a historic moment. There are very few places left that a president gets to go to that seem big, like Nixon going to China, and Cuba is one of them. Now, the criticism is, of course, that he's going there without having gotten anything for it. That in the year and so many months that he has opened diplomatic relations, that the Cubans haven't relaxed any of the oppressive rules on their own people, that they haven't actually made things better in terms of human rights, and that the president's kind of, you know, being played here. The argument the president makes is it's a long process. And yes, we haven't seen as much progress as we would like, but the very sight of an American president coming to Cuba will say this is a different era, we're changing things, and ultimately, over the long term, will make a difference.
I remember at Nelson Mandela's funeral when everybody was upset about the sign language interpreter who wasn't actually sign language interpreting. The president shook Raul Castro's hand.
That's right.
And I remember thinking, wow, no one noticed that that just happened.
Right.
And that was kind of the first of this, as far as we know, opening.
Yeah, it was. And he'll see Raul Castro while he's there in Havana. He will not seek Fidel Castro. That's been on the no-go list in terms of the negotiations about what this trip will be about. That's a step too far still in American politics. But, you know, he's met with Raul a couple times. He met with him now last year at the Summit of the Americas, and they have, you know, I wouldn't say they've got a close friendship or relationship, but he's trying to create the idea that we should have a working relationship.
Was this on the Obama administration's bucket list?
It definitely was, yes. And there are not a lot left for him in the next 10 months in terms of foreign policy. He's not likely to go to Tehran. We're not likely to ever get
Guantanamo
close enough.
Guantanamo is not likely to close.
We're not likely to close Guantanamo. And so this is sort of like the biggest sort of spectacle kind of moment left he's got.
Karen, I want to go back to politics with you for a moment, because inherent in this stop Trump idea is that somebody else can step in, assuming that it's not someone currently running. It was John Boehner's bright idea this week, as has been others in the past, that it should be Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. Let's listen to what he said about that.
I saw Boehner last night, and I told him to knock it off. You know, I used slightly different words. I used his own words that he used to use against us when he told us to knock things off. It's not going to be me. It should be somebody running for president. Look, I made a decision over a year ago not to run for president. I really believe if you want to be president, you should run for president.
He also made a decision 6 months ago not to be Speaker of the House.
Exactly.
So what are we to think?
Well, I do think that it would be difficult for somebody who hasn't even been in, you know, as it were, in the arena to step in. But certainly, you know, Paul Ryan has become the face of Republican governance. I mean, he's become to the degree that the Republican
Which
Party...
Which is the problem, isn't it?
True, but to the degree that the Republican Party at this moment stands for any actual ideas and any actual policies, those are Paul Ryan's ideas and policies. So you can certainly see why the idea would have some appeal. But and then there are all kind of convention rules about, you know, whose names can be actually be put into nomination. They've
got to have won 8 states, right?
You have to have won a majority of delegates in 8 states.
Right.
That rule is almost certain it will be rewritten for this convention. And that, of course, is the other thing. I mean, these conventions, they can just blow up all their rules and start from scratch. So theoretically, it's possible.
I don't want to spoil it for you if you haven't watched House of Cards, but according to the fictional part, this could happen. Okay. I want to turn to you, Pete. Give us a preview of next week. We have a couple of big cases coming up at the court.
Right. Well, the biggest one is another challenge to Obamacare. You may remember that when it was started, the part of it was that the health insurance would have to cover contraceptive care for women. Now, the administration first said, well, okay, after there was some blowback, they said, all right, we'll carve churches out of that. Churches don't have to provide that coverage. They're exempt. But then a lot of other organizations said, well, you know, religious colleges, Notre Dame, Georgetown, the Little Sisters of the Poor, what about us? So the administration said, okay, here's all you have to do. You fill out a certain form saying that you find this a religious burden, this would violate your religious principles, and then you don't have to do this. The Little Sisters of the Poor said that's still not good enough because that still makes us complicit. So the Supreme Court said, okay, Little Sisters, all you have to do, you don't have to sign the form, just give us a note. And tell us the name of your insurance company, the government says. So here's the question. Does doing that, is that still enough to violate their religious principles? The government says, no, you're opting out. You don't pay for the coverage anymore. You have nothing to do with deciding who gets it. The Little Sisters and the other organizations, there are dozens of religiously affiliated organizations, colleges, universities, charities. They say it's still our health plan that's being used to provide this coverage. We're not out of it. We're, in essence, opting in, and that violates our religious principles. So the Supreme Court's going to have to decide who's right there.
4-4.
Well, it could be 4-4, although I will tell you that the lawyers on both sides doubt that it will be, even though it was 5-4 when this question was...
All right, we are back. You know, guys, we have so much to share and so little time. We're running out of time fast, there is still so much to tell. But, you know, before that, let me give you another tune, another music, and then we'll be back.
Metti un periodo buio lì senza amore, in cerca di una notte fatta per bere, e fai di tutta la tua vita un bicchiere, e aspetti un'alba che ti porti a dormire.
You know, Italian is always a part of this deal, if you like it or not, even that we don't have our Wednesday anymore, but we still have our Italian music, so... Sooner or later, you will hear some, all right? That was Riccardo Folli. Anyway, we had a terror attack on Saturday in Turkey, Istanbul, and there is some notes that Prime Minister Netanyahu said. Let's listen to that.
Brings to light the fact that we're all subject to terrorist onslaughts, terrorism, international terrorism, Islamist terrorism is now attacking the countries of the Middle East and the countries beyond the Middle East. Its scope is international. The response to it should be international.
All right. It wasn't easy on Saturday in Turkey, and for some reason many feel that they can travel and just go to have a luxury time or whatever, but it ain't true anymore. It's devastating when in the middle of the day, suicide bomber decided to hurt people and kill people. American, two Israeli American got killed, and another third Israeli, one of the three, died, and people wounded. And of course, the Israeli, you know, the equivalent of the Red Cross, the Israeli Magen David, the Star of David, arrived to rescue, on a rescue mission, and took all the passengers, all the wounded home. But it's not easy to be in the Middle East these days, and it's not easy everywhere. So I want you to all pay attention, take care of yourself, be aware of your surrounding all the time. It's not funny. And if you have any suspicions of people, please let the authority know. Don't open any strange cases, suitcase, stuff that you don't know. And just let's be courageous. As Leslie said, we need courage in our life. And don't run away from them. Just stand up and try to do the best and be, you know, and be alive, stay alive. That's the most important thing. Now, we're running out of time again, and I want to tell you, first of all, that Israel and the Jewish people all around the world are starting, celebrating in a few days the holiday of Purim. Holiday of Purim is a masquerade holiday, which is not equivalent to the carnival, because there is a story, a Cinderella story. So let's listen. Let's before I let you go with listening to the music, you have to listen to the story of Esther, the story of Queen Esther, the little girl that was, her uncle used to work in the court of the kingdom, and one day the king was of course not happy with his queen, and he decided to let her go. And he was looking for a new bride, and he called all the worthy dam of the kingdom. And the kingdom of the Persian, think about it, it's a Persian king. It was so huge and so vast that so many girls arrived there. Now, the girls were in brown, and this is a great Hollywood story that we need to make a new movie out of it. And all the girls, and there was one girl named Esther that her uncle told her, hey, you have to stay in line, get pretty, get fixed like all the other girls, and see, you know, maybe the king will like you. And sure enough, the grace of God, the king liked Esther and made her a queen. Now, Queen Esther was shy and was, you know, smart, and her uncle, who worked in the kingdom, knew what's going on. And when he heard that there was one guy that wanted to destroy all the Jewish people, they came to Esther, and Esther told her, you know, you're not there because of your beauty. You're there because God put you to save the people. And that's a miracle that happens every so often, that, you know, people can learn. Because there is God, and it's not us, and he intervened. So Queen Esther came before the king and told him that there is a plot that he signed, and made him sign on a plot to kill all the Jewish people. And the king, that was really offended by the fact that people, mercenary, wanted to kill, you know, the beloved people of his queen, got revenge on them. So, and the story is that sometimes when you want to kill them, they might do the opposite to you, right? So be careful what you are wishing, and put the good seed in the universe, so your plants will sow to great deeds and great plants, and your future will be blossoming for your generation and for their generation next. That's why that whatever we planted yesterday, we're sowing today, and look what we have. And maybe the plants of today that will show love, happiness, and togetherness, will come up and be plants of the universe of tomorrow that will be happy and honored to live for the children to come after us. All right? By all means, I'm Orly Benny Davis, and this is BBS Radio, and A Possible Truth is here for you every Monday. God bless you all. I love you. Have a happy Purim, everybody. And Godspeed for everybody. APAC, go, go. Go get them. We love you. All the best. And come back home, President Obama from Cuba. God bless you. Ciao, ciao.
Giorni, vecchi discorsi, sempre da fare, storie ferme sulle panchine, in attesa di un lieto fine.